as a prosecutor, every time I would stand up to do cross-examination of the defendant, you've got this mad rush of adrenaline.
He went 0 to 60 in like 4 seconds, but all of a sudden now, okay, this guy means business. Now it's danger time, and we all know what can happen with these kind of pursuits.
Cooler weather is here, but that means dehydration is harder to spot. 3 out of 4 people are dehydrated without even knowing. Don't be one of them. Single serving of Liquid IV hydrates 2 to 3 times more efficiently than plain water. Because hydration isn't just drinking water, it's how your body processes it. Liquid IV is an easy, healthy hydration boost with each serving as good as 2 to 3 bottles of water plus vitamin C, B3, B5, B6, and B12. Plus, it tastes great. I enjoy lemon lime, but there's also strawberry, passion fruit, even apple pie. Through November 30th, get 30% off at liquidiv.com. Stock up for the holidays. The morning after too much holiday cheer, Liquid IV can help you feel better faster. Plus, good hydration can help boost immunity through cold and flu season. And every serving is vegan, non-GMO, and made in the USA. Visit liquidiv.com and use code WONDERY for 30% off through Cyber Monday, November 30th at midnight Pacific time. That's code WONDERY at liquidiv.com.
Hello, and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. I'm your host, Francie Hakes. Everyone, you may notice that the dulcet tones of Jim Clementi are missing this week. I promise you, it's only a week. Jim is on an assignment working on some narration for a special Audible project we have coming up. And in fact, it is an Audible project that is going to involve our very special guest today and someone that I really appreciate joining me and filling in. Spoiler alert, it's one of the two people known as the Jims.
A.K.A. Fitz, James R. Fitzgerald, Jim Fitz. Francie, nice to be back with you. I know Jim's busy doing other things. We'll miss him, but I think we'll have a good time nonetheless today.
Well, Fitz, you are definitely, I would have to say, probably our listeners' favorite guest. I mean, whenever you're on, they go completely crazy. And when you're not on, I'm not exaggerating, they clamor for Fitz.
I have a text, or was it a Facebook message from a few years ago, that when Fitz would come on your show and they would hear my name, this woman's dog would go crazy because the dog's also named Fitz. And I always wondered if someone names a dog after you, is that an insult or a compliment?
I'm sure it's a compliment.
I'll take it as a compliment. But so if Fitz the dog is out there, get ready. We're going to have a good time over the next half hour plus.
Well, Fitz, for some, we have lots of new listeners all the time. And so for anyone just tuning in to Best Case, Worst Case, I want to make sure that everyone knows our backgrounds. Of course, I'm a former state and federal prosecutor. Fitz, why don't you give us the nickel tour of the background of the legendary profiler known as Jim Fitz Fitzgerald?
Oh, okay. I'm not sure how legendary, but I'll take that. Thank you. Graduated college, Penn State, store detective for about a year in downtown Philadelphia, kind of a crazy job back then. A cop in Bensalem PD. We're going to talk about a case from way back then coming up in a few minutes. 11 years, detective, sergeant, all that stuff. 1987, joined the FBI. That's where I met Jim Clementi. First day at the academy in Quantico. We were started our friendship then, and we've been very good friends ever since. We both went to New York together on the bank robbery squad. That is Jim Clementi and I. And I became a profiler in 95. He came down there in about 97 to Quantico. I worked Unabomb and John Benet Ramsey and Anthrax, DC Sniper. Jim was involved in most of those. And retired in 07, went to work for Criminal Minds and Sleepy Hollow, a few other shows. Did some audio projects with Jim and XG Productions, you too, Francie. And that's the nutshell. I'm a profiler, forensic linguist. I still teach forensic linguist at California University of Pennsylvania and wrote 3 books, all titled A Journey to the Center of the Mind. And the story we're going to talk about today is actually chapter 44 out of that book. Yeah, it's a long book.
Well, and Fitz, Rumor has it there might be another book on the way. Is that true?
Yeah, I keep getting requests by people. I've got your three books so far. When's the fourth one? You stop right after Unabom. You have 10 years left in your career. I said, I'm doing it. I'm getting there. But I get all these demands from people to do things, podcasts from my friend Francie. But I think I can do this and still keep writing. It will be out in 2021. I'm not sure, mid or late 21. But maybe it'll be a great Christmas present for this time next year.
Well, for sure. That's, and we'll have you back on so you can remind our listeners when it comes out so they can all buy it.
I appreciate that.
Fantastic. Well, Fitz, so let's start off with the question that Jim and I always ask everybody. And that is, where were you in your career when the case you're going to talk about today came into you?
Good question. And it is a logical question to ask. So this is Thanksgiving. So it has a theme to it. It's a holiday theme to our talk today. Of course, it goes way beyond the Thanksgiving dinner, what you're about to hear. But I was a patrol sergeant at the Ben Salem Police Department. Now, that's a suburb of Philadelphia. You kept referring to it as Maybury last time we talked.
For sure.
100 sworn. We're a little bit bigger than Maybury. Very busy township just north of Philadelphia. PA Turnpike runs through it, I-95. Major racetrack, Route 1. So definitely busy place, still is to this day. And I was working the midnight shift. I think it was a 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift. Thanksgiving night. So my shift started 9 p.m. Thanksgiving night after a nice meal with my family. And then I was working all the way through 7 the next morning.
So Fitz, that means you, when everyone else is still probably eating pie or maybe napping in their recliner watching football, you have to actually put on a bulletproof vest and your uniform and go to work?
Well, I worked the night before too. So I got home at 7, slept till about maybe 2 that day. Then the company starts coming in and all of a sudden, yeah, dinner's over and people are watching football, cleaning up. I go and I get a quick shower, throw on my my ballistic vest, you're right, and all the accoutrements of my equipment. And at 8:45 or so now, probably about 8:30, since I was now a sergeant, had to be in a bit earlier. It was only about a 5-minute ride. I said goodbye to all the guests, the kids, and off to work I went.
Well, and you know, our listeners will be familiar with Ben Salem by now, Fitz, first, of course, from listening to you multiple times, but also we recently had Chris McMullins on, and he talked specifically about a tragic murder case of a young girl that went unsolved for decades. And in fact, he mentioned that you were involved in some of the early response when the child was missing, and it sort of tied it all together when Chris joined the force later and eventually helped to solve the case and bring justice for her family, for her parents.
Yeah, Chris is a good friend of mine now. We never worked together. He joined the PD about 3 years after I left. I think he joined in 1990. He's a great detective. I sponsored him into the VDOC Society. We need to get you there someday, Francie. It's in Philadelphia. The third Thursday of every month, they meet in the very posh Union League building in downtown Philly. And we solve cold cases. We're experts from all over the region, and we fly in police officers and investigators from all around the country, even Canada for the first time last year. Now, of course, it's all been suspended with COVID. We've been doing some online things, whatever, but we're hoping to start up again in March and resume solving cases. So I sponsored Chris in there, and he's a great addition to it, and he's a good actor, too. He's actually done some work in movies, and I think he has a whole second career going when he retires from the PD in about a year or two, I think, when he's eligible.
I think that's true. So, Ben Salem, Pennsylvania, Thanksgiving night. It's probably fairly cold in Pennsylvania by then. You head out and you get to the office at Ben Salem Police Department. What happens?
Well, I want to give a little background. These were the dark years in Ben Salem PD. There, a different form of politics took over. And Francie, I know you're very aware of what's happened in the U.S. in the last 4 years. A microcosm of that was in Ben Salem in the mid-80s, in which a chief kind of from the outside named Rich Viola came in, and I worked very well with him. He was a sergeant in the Philly PD, but the swamp of Ben Salem, we didn't call it that back then, but it truly was. They resented this guy coming in. So they wound up firing him, kind of like they tried to impeach Trump. And there really are a lot of analogies. Anybody who reads my second book, I think, will pick up on that. It was written before the whole Trump saga, or at least the impeachment part kicked in, but you can see many similarities. So I was kind of on the now. So he got fired. I'm now in the outs with this new chief who had been fired before that. So I want to give a little bit of a background, and you'll see how these things played out. Because the night before Thanksgiving, I arrested a township politician for exposing himself to a young boy. And I must have forgot to tell the acting chief of police, kind of the guy who didn't like me. And he got really upset when all the headlines were the Thanksgiving Day paper, the biggest paper of the year, by the way, back then, not anymore. And so I knew he was a little upset at me, and that comes into the end of our story. But now let's go back to Thanksgiving dinner's over. I have roll call. You know, I always have a little safety tip to give the guys, go out there. And it's a squad of about 10 officers. And we're doing our thing, relatively quiet night. And lo and behold, around 2:30, 2:45 a.m., one of my younger officers calls me over. I say, my. I mean, I was the sergeant. I was in charge of the squad out there. And he was a younger guy. He was full of what we used to say, piss and vinegar. Can we say that word on a podcast?
You can. Jim, the other Jim, drops the F-bomb regularly, Fitz.
I won't do that. So he liked to really hustle. But he was what I would say an inch wide and a mile thick in his profession, which means his expertise was DUI arrest. Mm-hmm. This guy was the best DUI arrest maker, if you will. And he would do 3 and 4 in a 10-hour shift. And this is before this is before MAD was formed. This is 1984 we're talking. And DUIs were not that big of a deal. He was a breathalyzer operator. He would bring in anybody, and he wound up getting awards from the governor. He had the most DUI arrests in PA, in Pennsylvania, and all these awards. In fact, at roll call one, and he was a relative rookie. He's only on about 3 years at this point. And the running joke was someone at roll call, I call him Officer Dan in the book, because again, I mention him in chapter 44. This all comes together as the story unfolds. At roll call one night, someone said, "Hey, Dan, if your mother was driving a car and it was swerving, you pulled it over and you gave her a breathalyzer, you know, the field sobriety test, would you arrest her?" "Well, it depends what her numbers were. Like if it's 0.05 or above, whatever, he would have arrested her then." He was dead serious. He would have arrested his own mother for DUI. So Officer Dan calls.
But Fitz, so let me just interject. What fun fact for everyone listening. Everyone talks about murder cases, right? Murder cases are hard to prosecute. They're hard to arrest people. They're hard to convict people. They're hard to try. But the truth is, in most states, Georgia certainly is one of them, a DUI trial is actually among the most complicated kind of cases you can try because of what you were just talking about. The breathalyzer is a sophisticated scientific instrument, and there are all these hoops that the investigator or the arresting officer had to have gone through long before ever making the stop of the suspect for DUI. And so it's one of those weird quirks in the law that while the consequences for DUI, aside from killing someone when you're drunk driving, but aside from that, the consequences of DUI in terms of punishment are generally not that onerous and almost always probation. But the path to get there as a prosecutor is actually really complicated and very specialized. No normal prosecutor in a normal DA's office wants to try those cases because there are all these hoops you have to jump through as the prosecutor too in order to prove the case. So it's interesting that you had an officer who specialized in that.
Well, and that and the PD or our captain or lieutenant wasn't the one that specialized him. This is just what he wanted to do. And by the way, the prosecutors liked him because he had all those check boxes marked off. He would do it. He would had all the certification. He knew the machine was up to date. He knew how to do the preliminary tests in the field, whether the car, you know, probable cause for stopping the car, and he almost always got conviction. So keep this in mind. Now he calls me over. He says, "Fitz," and he always had a toothpick in his mouth. I said, "Officer Dan." When you're talking to me, I'm fine with the toothpick, but I've seen you go out in the public, no toothpick with the public. Oh, yeah, okay, no problem. He takes it out. And he goes, I got to talk to you. I'm really bummed out about my career. I said, why is that, Dan? Well, I'm doing pretty good with this DUI stuff, but I never make any other kind of arrest. I'm never making a robbery arrest or catching burglars in action or, you know, catching a rapist or a sexual assault guy. And I said, well, Dan, one reason is you're making all these DUI arrests, and that's not even your mission. You're not on like the accident investigative division or anything like that. You're a regular patrol officer. And Dan, sometimes maybe I've told you this before, you know, we kind of lose you off the streets when you're doing three DUIs in a row. DUIs are bad. Don't get me wrong, Dan. And they should be taken off the streets. But maybe sometimes you could be out here to help with other things. Well, Fitz, I know your record. I read newspaper articles about you before I was hired and all these plainclothes arrests you had. And I did have a good arrest and conviction record and all kinds of different crimes. And he said, I want to get more arrests like that under my belt. But I don't know how to do it. I keep driving around and I'm going, you know, up this street and down this road. And I just, how do you know when you're going to find that arrest? And I said, well, Dan, you really don't know. And you're doing half the right thing. But let me give you some advice. What time is it right now? I kind of knew. He said, well, I guess it's around 3 a.m. I said, okay, here's an idea. And here's how I made some good arrests, especially on a midnight shift. Sit in your car, turn off the engine, crack down the window, and let the crime come to you. Well, what do you mean? And I said, I've made a lot of arrests with my car shut off at kind of a major intersection, maybe in the shadows somewhere, lights out, and wait for either window smashing, wait for someone yelling or screaming, wait for the screeching of tires, wait for perhaps gunshots. I've actually heard those. Maybe trash cans getting kicked over or knocked over if someone's trying to get into a second floor. You'd be surprised. You sit with the windows down and put both windows down, so you have kind of that stereo effect. You'd be surprised what you hear. And then you respond, calling back up if you think you have something. And he's nodding his head. Yeah, you know what? You're onto something there. So that's why you're the Sarge, aren't you? That's why you make the big bucks. I said, well, I don't know about that part. But hey, take my advice. And you're right here now at the intersection of Route 1 and Old Lincoln Highway, major intersection. Yeah, just hang out here. It was a Hilton Hotel there at the time. Okay, thanks, Sarge. I take off. I call my other officers. I want to meet and sign his daily log. So I'm over now to Ben Sam High School, probably about 3 miles from where I was, and talking, casual conversation, sign this guy's log. Next thing you know, beep, beep, beep over our radio system. All cars. It really does happen like this for the non-officers out there. Be advised, 2 Trans Ams, brand new, were just driven off the lot of so-and-so Pontiac dealer, Route 1, Old Lincoln Highway. Oh. Sector car, pursue other cars, look for these white and black Trans Am. I'm thinking, I just left there, and that's where I left Officer Dan. He may have seen this whole thing go down. So right away, there's about 10 of us on the road. I start assigning cars to different intersections. All right, 2 Trans Ams, they may very well be like together. We get, the first officer arrives in the scene. He said, yeah, there's a guard on duty. And next thing he knows, the Trans Ams just both together went through a chain link fence from the interior of the lot onto the street and went northbound on Route 1.
Wow.
Now, this was a first for me to hear sort of a car theft in progress, hear 2 car thefts, and not just, a Volkswagen Beetle. This is 2 muscle cars taking off out of a car dealership. I'm getting all my troops lined up, different intersections, mostly northbound of where it happened, because that's the direction they went. And Officer Dan, 2212, where are you? No response. All right, 13, go over here. 2215, go here. I'm going to head up north into the Chamonix Valley. And that's what I do. It's a foggy night. It's now this is literally 3:45, 3:50 a.m. I cruise up into this area called the Chamonix Valley. It's kind of a residential area, and I'm still assigning cars. Nobody sees anything. No description of the drivers. It's a white Trans Am, black Trans Am. It's foggy. It's kind of spooky out. You can imagine like a film noir type movie in black and white. There's really no colors out there. I wind up coming to this intersection, again, residential area, nothing around me, and it's a red light, and I come to a dead stop, and who pulls up or what pulls up exactly across the street facing me, except in the other lane, two Trans Ams.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you just were at the right place at the exact right time.
I know. And who knows how fate took me there. And it's a correction. It wasn't a red light. It's a stop sign. And I'm stopped there and I'm just sitting at the intersection. And I learned a long time ago, don't put the radio up to my mouth because the people can see what I'm doing. Keep it down like by my chest. And I'm there. All right, 22 cars. I've got both vehicles spotted on the Chamonix Boulevard and Declaration Drive. Give me backup. So I'm sitting there. Nobody's moving. Like now 30 seconds have gone by. I'm at my stop sign going westbound. They're at their stop sign going eastbound. So
nobody's moving. So are you assuming at that point that they can see you and they're trying to figure out what to do?
It's a marked car. They know I didn't put any lights on, no overt actions. I think one of them, to his credit, in like the left lane of the lane they were in. So it was a four lane highway. He puts his left indicator on. So here's this guy in a stolen car. At least now he's following the motor vehicle statutes.
Well, he does not want to get attention.
So he's going to turn, and I flash my high beams as if, no, you go ahead. Lo and behold, they both sit there. 15 seconds goes by. He flashes his high beams. No, I insist, officer, you go first.
And so he's just hoping you have no idea.
Exactly. He's hoping I'm going to go straight. They're going to go basically behind me, make a left, and I'm out of there. They have no idea, of course, what's going on. I mean, they know they stole these cars, and I'm positive these are the cars. I flash one more time. The car finally takes off to my left, and I'm on the radio the whole time. Guys, get me up here. I got one going northbound on Declaration, one going eastbound. And I figure I'm only one car. I'm by myself. I can't chase them both. So instead of making a U-turn, the car that went left. I made a right turn and followed him. I said, this has to be the car. I said, all right, everybody, I'm following the black Trans Am northbound, and I'm giving direct, no lights or sirens, nothing. The other car, go find the other car. It's approaching the Acme at this intersection, and I'm trying to get other cars to cover that. Next thing you know, I'm about 150 yards following the only car I could follow, and with no lights or sirens or nothing, this guy just hits the gas.
I'm a fan of the movie Chinatown. Jack Nicholson's never been better, and Robert Towne's script is the perfect screenplay. It's pinnacle film noir, set in the best place to explore darkness, sunny California. But it's based on real events, the California Water Wars of the early 20th century. California has always had a problem with water and land, or rather, with the power and money that comes with controlling them. So I was excited to discover a new podcast covering the same California version of the American dream, dark and criminal. In California City, the new podcast from LAS Studios, host Emily Guerin tells the story of money, power, and deception. It's one where the lines between hero and villain are blurred. Crusading attorneys commit their own heinous crimes. A police chief protects and serves his own interests. And it all started 60 years ago with an immigrant and an American dream of his own. If you love true crime and noir-style storytelling, you'll love California City. Download California City at las.com/California City or wherever you listen to podcasts. That's laist.com/California City.
Y'all know how great it feels to have fresh hair color. Madison Reed makes it easy to find your perfect shade. You just go online and take the color quiz, answer a few questions, and they'll recommend the best options for you. What's really cool is you can try on the different colors with Madison Reed's online hair color tool. They even have professional colorists you can call or chat with if you need a little help. Get ammonia-free, multidimensional hair color delivered to your door starting at $22 at madison-reed.com. Use our promo code BESTCASE and you'll get 10% off plus free shipping on your first color kit. Our promo code again is BESTCASE. Visit madison-reed.com now to find your perfect shade.
He takes off 0 to 60 and you know, 3 to 5 seconds.
Now he's decided this guy knows who he knows what's happening. I've got to run.
Absolutely.
You know, running is always stupid, Fitz. We see this all the time, and it's much more recent than all that, really. But this police helicopter, news helicopter, the chase, They always get caught. Why do they do it, Fitz?
Well, yeah, and there's been a lot of criminal and civil litigation after police pursuits. And actually, I'm in favor sometimes of calling off a pursuit, especially if you get a tag of a car. Now, this is a stolen car. There was no tag on it. But, you know, helicopters can make a difference. So, like I said, this was a residential area, but we're talking now about 4 a.m. No one is out. It's basically Black Friday, the big shopping day. No one's up yet. And Walmart didn't open at 5 a.m. back then. Well, there was no Walmart. But anyway, so next thing you know, the car takes off. I throw my lights and siren on, get on the radio. I'm in pursuit. Everybody, you know, here's where I'm going. Look for the other car. And this guy makes a quick turn.
Can I ask you a question? I've always been curious about this. And it's one of the, you know, we promise to take our listeners behind police lines. I think this is so behind police lines. What is it actually like for you when something like that happens? Okay, you're playing cat and mouse with this guy, not, you know, literally. And then he turns, you follow him, everything's sort of normal. And then all of a sudden, in a split second, he takes off and is obviously running from you. What goes through your mind? Are you nervous? Are you anxious? Or are you just focused? Or is it all of those things?
Yeah, I think a combination of all of those things. I mean, I mentioned before, he went 0 to 60 in like 4 seconds. Well, all of a sudden, my adrenaline, it was probably already up to about 20 in the same, you know, mile per hour scale. But all of a sudden now, okay, this guy means business. Now it's danger time. And we all know what can happen with these kind of pursuits. And of course, the lead car in a pursuit, meaning the one being pursued, he has the advantage of always know where he's going next. The police car does not. And I'm also thinking, boy, there's another car. Should I have followed that one? But I just had to make a decision and say, no, this is the one that was the most logical one to follow. So the adrenaline is going. What I learned after my first pursuit, I was probably only in about 4 or 5 of them. And it's very logical for a officer to yell over the radio. And I'm not going to try to mimic it now. Your listeners will have their ears blown out. But and I've been a sergeant when other officers have had pursuits. Joe, lower the volume. We can't understand what you're saying. So I learned some. It's a hard trick. It's not even a trick. It's a talent that really has to be developed. That, you know, your adrenaline is it. High speed or full speed, along with the miles per hour on your car, but you have to. Everybody, right turn onto, Constitution Drive, you know, whatever it is you're driving on. So that's the big thing you really have to control. You are definitely highly pumped during this time frame, but you can't let it sound that way. Not because you're afraid of people thinking you're pumped, but they have to understand where you are. If you're just screaming and yelling, it benefits no one.
Well, and you know, Fitz, it's not quite, obviously, it's not the same thing at all. I've never, you know, been a law enforcement officer, but as a prosecutor, that something very similar happened to me every time I would stand up to do cross-examination of the defendant. You know, you never quite knew when the defense attorney was going to stop the direct exam. So you had to be ready at any second to stand up and boom, start asking questions. And every single time it happened to me in my whole career, that's all the questions I have, Your Honor, said the defense attorney. And then all of a sudden, my adrenaline level just gushes up and you can just feel it. It's literally a physical sensation. And when you stand up, it's like all of a sudden 7,000 things go through your mind, but you can't act like a crazy person, at least not with the first question. You know, you have to be calm. You have to attack the cross-examination. You have to be controlled. At the same time, you've got this mad rush of adrenaline. So I've just always wondered how police officers, you know, whether it's in a car or a foot pursuit or even, you know, in an interrogation, how do you stay calm? Because that's a challenge for anyone.
It is. And at this point in my, I had about 8 years on at this point in my career, and I had pretty much seen it all, at least in a mid-sized PD. And I just knew enough, you know, keep the adrenaline controlled somehow and get the job done. And that was my goal right then. In the meantime, I'm still calling Officer Dan. I'm calling his call number, of course, his car number. Anyone hear from Officer Dan? You know, nothing. I'm thinking, geez, maybe he was parked over in the hotel lot. These guys God, maybe they took him out first or did something bad to him. Oh, no response. And this is after I just had to talk with him sitting around, windows open. You'll hear something. He would have been right on top of these cars. So I'm chasing this car, but I'm, quite frankly, I'm concerned with my young, charge officer, Dan. Anyway, so the chase goes on. I won't bore listeners with left here and right there. They're not going to know the geography of my old town. But needless to say, it went on for about 2 miles. And it was a little bit icy that night, too. Not just fog, but ice. And now we're, 4:05, 4:10 a.m. Luckily, no other cars were out, or very few. And we run down one highway and cross another. He goes right through a red light, and I slow down. I don't want to hit anybody. I go through the light. I'm still there. He goes up ahead of me, and he winds up hitting a patch of ice and does a 180 and spins around. But the car stays on its wheels, if you will. I managed to hit the brakes, slide a little bit, and I'm basically right next to him. And I'm looking in the window. I have a good ID. I see it's a 19-year-old, kid, 19, 20-year-old kid. And we stop for a minute, and my window is up, and my hands, I'm trying to get things on the radio. And I didn't even have a chance to put the window down because they were crank windows back then. And I'm just saying, stop here. I'm putting my finger, stop here. He just looks at me real calmly, puts his middle finger up, hits the gas, and takes off.
Oh, and now you really want this guy.
Now, for the first time, I'm taking this personal. So, of course, I spin around on the ice. I chase him back up where we just came from. He makes a U-turn, comes down. He runs through the same red light again. He hits the same patch of ice. He does a 360 this time. I'm 30, 50 feet behind him. The car flies up in the air about 15 feet, and it lands exactly on its roof, flat on its roof.
Oh, my God.
And the chase, I know, is now the thing is actually spinning around like a top. And I said, the car just flipped on this intersection. Get me heavy rescue. Get me ambulance. Get me backup. I'm going to be out on foot. I quick turn around. I want my headlights on the car so I can see. I have a best view in that regard. It's kind of a dark intersection. And next thing you know, I go up with flashlight in one hand, my gun not out, but I had it on my by my holster ready to be pulled out. I think another officer pulls up and I'm yelling, get out of the car. Let me see your hands. Nothing. I'm thinking, this guy, he may be dead. And I see red fluid coming out of the car.
Oh, no.
And I'm thinking, that may be blood. And just about this time, one of my officers showed up and he kind of gets the other side and he'll come out of the car, hands up, identify yourself, everything I could think of. And I'm getting down on my knees. I'm no sign of this guy. But I've had car accidents where little kids, you don't even know the kids in the car, and because the parents may have been seriously hurt or killed, and they're actually in the back seat under some, blankets or something. And at least in the one or two times it happened to me, the kids survived and they were okay. I'm thinking this guy may have gotten thrown into the back seat. He could be in the trunk. Who knows? We finally get everybody there. We're underneath. We can't see a thing with this guy. And we finally get heavy rescue to come in, heavy rescue tow truck. We flip the thing over, and it turns out it was antifreeze we saw coming out of the car.
Oh.
And the car was empty.
What?
This kid, who I saw his face, once the car, upside down pancake on the ground and the roof of this Trans Am, I guess it was what they used to call it, a T-top. There wasn't much of a roof and it was kind of pushed in, but there must have been just enough room for him to crawl out and I assume run into an apartment complex.
Oh, Fitz. And so he must have done that while you were basically making the radio call.
He had to do it within 15 seconds. And he had to be adroit. He had to be, fit and probably skinny to get out the little space that was between, the upside down roof and the top of the car door. And lo and behold, we have an empty stolen car. This kid got away from me and I just couldn't believe it. And I'm still saying, anybody else see the whatever car I was following? I forget. I think the other one was the white Trans Am. Did anybody see this? And they finally found that at 7 a.m. behind the supermarket, the loading dock or something. Someone dumped it there. So I'll end this story by saying a detective got assigned to the case. He took fingerprints off the steering wheel. Somehow some ex-girlfriend got involved. She gave information and they wound up saying that was her boyfriend and his buddy who just decided to, who go into the car dealership. She dropped them off, actually, and they just somehow used a screwdriver and a pair of pliers, and they hot-wired the cars, and that's how they got them out. They had no real plan, just wanted to go joyriding. They weren't professionals. I finally looked at a photo ID. The detective showed me a picture of six guys because, you know, I'm kind of a witness in this case, and they couldn't just show me one picture. I said, yeah, that's him right there. Put a finger up in front of him, and it would definitely ID the guy. And lo and behold, he was arrested. I came in for the interview. Remember me? Oh, yeah, you're the cop that was chasing me, right? I said, yeah, you're going to do some prison time for this, you know. Yeah, whatever. I got some friends up in county, you know, lockup.
Oh, my God. I mean, all for a joyride? He almost died.
Let's go back now. So finally, I'm actually concerned about Officer Dan. Anybody see or hear Officer Dan? No, Sarge, no. I'm asking in person. Finally, I'm going to headquarters around 6 a.m. And I hear Officer Dan call me on the radio, and he has me switch to Channel 3, kind of a private channel. And he's there, Sarge, I said, where have you been? Yeah, I'm down in Salem Harbor Apartments, which is in the far southeast corner of the township, just on the Philly border, nowhere near where we were. And yeah, Sarge, and the reason I didn't respond, I ran out of gas.
What?
So, Dan, we had this talk in the Route 1 hotel parking lot. I told you, sitting still, you know, don't drive all these miles in the car. He'd come in with 150 miles after his shift. Most of us have 30 to 50 miles. I see, I ran out. So can you send me a tow truck?
You're kidding. Yeah. Officer.
He had to get towed in. He missed this whole chase. This could have been his arrest, at least one of them. And he comes in, Fitz, Sergeant Fitz, I think I should be fired for this.
Well, I kind of agree with that.
I want to quit. I want to quit my job. I wasn't there for you guys. I said, Dan, did you stop and do what I suggested? And no. I took right off. I know I stayed there within 20 minutes. I would have seen this go down. All right, Dan. Well, we all learn from these things, don't we? So I go home at 7 a.m., get a good day's sleep. And I get called on the phone about 3 in the afternoon. It's by the deputy chief and his lieutenant, both guys who didn't like me. The lieutenant was like Director Mueller running his investigation because he was running his own investigation of the Trump-like Chief Viola. So, right. And I was called in as a witness on these things. So they both come in. They want me to come into headquarters. All right, well, I'm getting overtime for this whenever you're called in. So I know I'm probably going to be yelled at for locking up the politician 2 nights before, but I want to play a little game with them. I put this all in my book. So they call me in the office. I wait outside a little bit with the secretary. So what's this about? I don't know. Okay. And so they sit down with me. And it's funny how the conversation went. This is now Friday after Thanksgiving. Yeah, Fitzgerald, tell us about this arrest. I said, there was no arrest. What do you mean? There was an arrest. Are you going to sit here and lie to us? Sir, there was no arrest. He got away. And I'm talking about the car chase from like 6 hours ago. They're talking about the politician, the local auditor or whatever the heck he was, who got locked up. I locked him up for exposing himself to a little boy. And so we go on for like a minute and I'm purposely kind of not in. So, and finally, you know what I mean? You locked up Auditor Joe Scheck and we wouldn't know why we weren't told. I said, oh, I thought you called me in here to congratulate me on identifying the two Trans Ams. No, we don't care about that. We care about, and they go and they start bawling me out for not locking them. But when there was a lieutenant who actually assigned me the case to look into this auditor slash pervert who was exposing himself to little boys. So they yelled at me. They didn't congratulate me for helping to find the two Trans Ams. One of them was wrecked. The other one was in decent shape when it was found. And then, you know, a week or so later, both drivers were arrested when the detective did some work and put that case together. So it's Thanksgiving week coming up. And I know by the time this is dropped, it'll be Thanksgiving week. So I thought I'd tell a little Thanksgiving story. Just when I was done digesting my turkey around 3 a.m., here I am in a give or take 4 to 5 mile car chase at 80 to 90 miles an hour, sliding on ice in the fog, having someone with the indignity of giving me a finger once I get right next to him. Of course, luckily, he was just pointing his finger up and not a gun at me. I'm certainly aware of those kind of chases too. So no gunplay here.
Well, Hot Pursuit by Sergeant Fitz is the name of this episode, Fitz.
Well, it was, again, we can talk about DC, Sniper, Anthrax, Unabomb. But before all that stuff, this is what my life experience was about. And it's what made me into, you know, how to handle situations and how to address situations, you know, what to do right, what to do wrong. And I think Officer Dan told me he was a better officer after that. He matured after that night. He realized he wasn't there for his squad and, you know, it could have gotten really ugly, but he could have been there. He could have made the arrest and he still won a bunch of awards for DUI after that. And I don't know if he ever arrested his mother or not, but I think he maintained he would have still after that fact. But he did make some other arrests after that, and he thanked me. He apologized profusely for missing the action that morning, and he thanked me too. So as a lesson to everyone out there listening, you don't have to be a cop, you don't have to be law enforcement. Sometimes just sit back, kind of smell the roses, and you'd be surprised. Keep your ears open, your eyes open. You don't have to say a thing, and you'd be surprised what you can learn, what you can comprehend, and what can come to you, and then you make the best of it from there.
Well, Fitz, we have to ask you then the question we always ask, was this a best case or a worst case for you?
Best case for me, I would have preferred to have made the arrest. Worst case for Officer Dan, but he learned from it, which all of life is a learning experience, as we know. So I think I've probably answered it this way a few times, best case, worst case, kind of combined. But no, it was no skill identifying these guys. I just knew they went northbound. I swerved through a few intersections, a few streets, and I just took a long shot of where they would be and put the rest together from there. I wish I could have put cuffs on the guy that night. It took about a week longer to identify him, but I'll call that a best case, at least for me, on that Black Friday morning before the stores even opened.
Well, that's great, Fitz. Thank you so much for joining us this week. I mean, it's great. I know Jim's not here, and so I didn't have the Jims, but I have no doubt we will have you back where I'll have the Jims together again.
Well, as I always say, you're two of my favorite podcast interviewers. Now I'm going to make it. You're my favorite. You and Jim.
Well, Jim's not here, so it has to be me today.
Oh, yeah, forget him. So, Francie, it's you.
I get it.
You're the winner.
Thank you. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. Until next time, this is Best Case, Worst Case. Thanks for joining us.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production produced by Francie Hakes, Josh Murphy, and Jim Clementi at Empire Studios LA. Engineered and edited by Matt Gergel. Music composed and performed by Simba Sumba and hosted by Wonder.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to do something about child sexual abuse, Darkness to Light can help. Did you know that more than 90% of the time children are sexually abused by someone they know?
Jim, this isn't about stranger danger. It's about learning the true risks. Darkness to Light's training can help prevent, recognize, and react to child sexual abuse in your community.
When you make the decision to get involved, kids can be protected. It starts with you.
Visit www.d2l.org to take the training and learn more.
That's D2L.org.